My name is Bernard McNabore. I'm a historian at the University of Central Lancashire, and this is an oral history interview with
Dorothy Rosa Malloy. My maiden name was Harrison, and I lived at number 8 St Austin's Place, opposite St Augustine's Church.
When were you born, Rosa?
I was born on the 1st of the 6th, 1929.
What was the name of your father?
My father was John William Harrison.
And can you remember his date and place of birth?
Yes, he was born in Preston on the 7th of August, 1891.
Okay. What was his occupation?
He was a master painter and decorator.
Can you remember the sorts of hours that he worked?
When, by the time I was growing up, he had other people working for him. And it was fascinating because they were based in our home and they used to come in on Fridays and make out their worksheets. They painted churches, schools, houses, also anything, painted and decorated. And he was an absolute perfectionist. Later on they painted a lot of pubs for Matthew Brown's. And when the men came in, we were fascinated because when they filled in the timesheets, they'd put the place they'd been and the time they'd been, and they'd put do underneath, and we thought it meant that they'd do, we'd done it. It was a long time before we found out it meant ditto.
What was the age when your father died?
He was 56 when he died.
And when was that?
That was 1958, I think it would be,
So he was still working when he died?
He had retired because he had been sick. He'd had a heart attack and the doctor said he had to give up his work. And for 7 years he was great, and then one day he used to go to mass every day, walked across the road, sat down for his breakfast and just died.
What about your mother? What was the name of your mother?
My mother was May Morris, and she was born on the 26th of November, 1892, at Overton-on-Dee in Wales.
What was her age at marriage?
She was married in 1915, so 23.
Do you know what her occupation was before she was married?
Yes. While she was living in Wales, she had worked at a photographer's. One of her best friend's family had a photographic place, and she'd worked there. But when this friend grew old enough to join the business, there wasn't room for both of them. So my mother applied to Preston, to Melling's Photographers, which was just by the Ritz. In Church Street, not far from St John's Church, and she got started work there on May the 13th, 1912. She left Wales and came to live in Garden Street, Preston, with three other ladies, one of whom owned the house and the other two of them were teachers.
Okay. Can you remember the age when she died?
She died when she was 87. And she had never been, that was in 1980, and she had never been ill since 1923, except for the odd bit of flu or whatever.
Okay. Now, I'm not going to ask you to name your brothers and sisters, just tell me how many siblings you had.
I had 8 sisters and 5 brothers.
Did any of them die young?
No.
Can you remember anything about your grandparents?
I can remember my mother's father. His mother died before I was born. But her father was a great man. He was 96 when he died. And we used to go... her brother and his wife lived in Wrexham. And my grandfather lived with them. And so did his sister, who was Pernickety. And they were wonderful people. And every year, 4 of us at a time would go with my father on the train as far as Crewe. and my uncle would meet us at Crewe and take us for a fortnight's holiday. Then he would bring that lot back, and my father would take four more and swap over, three or four more, and swap over and take them back for a holiday, and he'd bring us home. And it was absolute heaven. They were wonderful people.
Yeah. Was that a regular occurrence during your childhood?
It was a regular occurrence until the war. The war put a stop to it.
Okay. Right. I'm going to come just to the household. When you were growing up, whereabouts did you live?
We lived in St. Austin's Place.
In Frenchwood?
In Frenchwood.
Okay. Can you describe the house?
Well, it had a small garden in front, and that was very useful. And there were railings round and a hedge. And that was very useful, because when we were children, my mother could fasten the gate, and we could play out on the front, which was a long flag front. And what we liked about it was it had a circular lid for this coal hole. And we used to be able to bang on that and play on it. And then we had two steps going up into the house, and there was a hall, and there was a front room, or what we called the sitting room, and that was my father's room. And we only went in to do piano practice and homework. We liked to keep out of it or get in quickly before he came home, because as a perfectionist, he always noticed any not wrong notes we were playing. And then there was a living room that we spent a lot of our time in, and then there was a kitchen behind that. We went down two steps to the kitchen, and it had a stone floor, and we used to scrub it every Saturday and do it with a donkey stone.
Okay. What about how many bedrooms were
four
there?
Bedrooms.
There were four bedrooms. Okay. Was it rented or owned?
It was rented from the church.
So all of your family lived in that house during your childhood?
There were never all of us at home at once. Those of us who were at home did. Because people were away, having been educated, or then during the war. Five of them were away during the war. And we were never all at home together.
Yeah. Who slept where? Did you share, or did you have your own bedrooms?
No, we shared. We shared, obviously. The boys at the front of the house, my parents at the front of the house, and the girls at the back of the house.
Okay.
And we had some wonderful times. My older sisters, as I grew up remembering them, they used to come and sit with them until we got to sleep. But before we got to sleep, they'd tell us stories, and we'd play games and all sorts of things. We felt sorry for the old woman who went to market and had her skirts cut short. And we did all sorts of interesting. We even used to do plays sometimes. But when my sister sat down on the stairs between the two rooms at the back, we knew it was time for us to settle down, and they would sing "Little Boy Kneels at the Foot of the Bread," or "Christopher Robin is Saying His Prayers," and that was it.
Okay. I'm just going to swing briefly from the family to... I'll come back to the family shortly. I'd like to examine the area that you lived in, around the church. It's in the centre of Frenchwood. Can you describe it? Local shops, play areas, and so on.
It was a lovely place to grow up. We lived... There were four houses at our side and four houses at the other side, and then from the end of those, across to the presbytery was a big wall. And on the other side of that wall was Albert Street Stables, where the people who came round with the horses and carts kept their horses. So we had a cul-de-sac to play in, and we had the wall where we could play games, and it was absolutely great. Very few cars came up. Mostly they came on Sundays, and of course we didn't play games on Sundays. It just was not done. You went for walks or whatever. It abounded with corner shops, and they were wonderful. There was one at the bottom, just on Manchester Road, where two ladies lived. There was one just across the road. Now that fascinated us, because they had a grandmother living there, and that grandmother had a black bag. And every time she used to come to our house, to see my mother. When she went away, she left a baby behind. And we knew she had that baby in that black bag when she came to visit us. And when she used to go to church, she had another black bag. We weren't quite sure that it was the same one, but we were dying for her to open it in church so we could look inside and see if there were any babies in it. And then there was a grocer's shop and a greengrocer's shop and a chip shop. Florrie and Janie had the chip shop, and they were absolutely spotless. The floor was scrubbed every day. They wore the white aprons. They had buns in their hair. They wore clogs. And when you went in, they'd call out to the sister in the middle, "Threepenny middle cup for Jack Harrison's child." And then they would come in and give you a chip wrapped in paper for you to sit and eat while you were waiting for your fish to be ready.
Were there any other shops that you can think of? What about pubs? Were there a lot of pubs in the area?
There were pubs, but we didn't really know much about those because my father didn't go to the pub.
Right.
They had, round the corner was the men's club belonging to the church, and below the men's club was the church hall, and a lot of the men in the district used to go to the men's club after church on a Sunday and then go home for the lunch. But it was very, very rarely that my father went there. There was a pub at the bottom of the road, and there's one in Manchester Road. There were quite a number round about. When the war was on, my mother did collections for Red Cross, and we had Red Cross tins, and we went every Sunday morning. And that's the only time we went in the pub, was to go and collect money for the Red Cross. There was one particular shop, and I liked going past that because it was a watchmaker's, and he mended watches, and he had a great big thing in his eye. And when you looked at him, one eye was a normal size and the other eye was massive. And we used to love it when he looked up at us in this great big eye, and then we'd run like mad. But he had a sign in his window, and it said, "Ears pierced, sixpence, painless, a shilling."
Lovely. What about your relationships with neighbours? Were they friendly, distant, sharing? How would you describe them?
Well, most of our neighbours in St Austin's Place were older people. And we used to try not to be the first person home from school, because my mother used to cook meals for them as well as for all of us. And the first person home from school had to take the meals to the neighbours. And during the war, because children drink as much tea as older people did, and some of them were living on their own, we used to have to take tea rations to them and sugar. And she shared everything. And one of them was 80 odd, and he used to come back to the house with his dishes after he'd washed them, ring the bell, and when he'd walk in and call out, "Are you there, Mother?" And he was 80, and my mother was at least 30 years younger than he was. We used to pull her leg about that. The next door to us was a boy who was my age, and we were in the infant school together. And we lived across the road from the presbytery where the priests lived. There were five priests living there then. And one day we found out that one of them had a birthday, and I had a halfpenny and he had a penny. And we went to a tiny little shop in the corner of Manchester Road, where two ladies lived, and we said, "Could we have 3 woodbines, please?" And she said, "What do you want woodbines for?" And we said, "Well, it's Father's birthday." So she put them in a little poke, and we carried an end each, and walked up Silver Street and St Austin's Place, and rang the presbytery bell, and the housekeeper said yes, and we said, "Could we speak to Father Gagan, please?" And they said, "Why do you want to speak to Father Gagan?" We said, "It's his birthday, and we brought him a present." And they had a special bell, because there were so many of them, and they ring so many times for that particular person to come. And we heard him come flying down the stairs, and he came into the entrance hall, and saw us there, and he came down on his knees, so he was on our level, and we said, "We've brought you a present."
Yeah, okay then. Yeah.
Jamila, you're out. Listen, can I just ring you in a little while? I'm doing a recording at the present moment. Yes. All right then. I'll ring you as soon as I finish. Bye bye.
Will there be a gap?
There'll be a bit of it, doesn't matter.
Right.
Don't matter.
Well, we walked down, he came running down and he knelt down next to us, put his arms round us, and when he saw what we'd bought him, he squeezed us so hard that it hurt and there were tears pouring down his cheeks. And we were very put off because we thought he'd be happy. We didn't think he'd be crying and he'd be hurting us by the time he was squeezing us. But he was very, very chuffed about that.
So, all in all, it sounds like it was a very self-contained and generally neighbourly area to be raised in.
A very happy area. Very, and there were a lot of children further down, and we played all sorts of wonderful games. We played.
I'll come to those in a minute.
Right.
I will do. I'll come to those in a minute. Just coming on now, obviously it's a large household. Did you all have to mix in and do chores and,
oh, yes,
and jobs?
Yes, we all had our jobs to do. Starting, you know, the older ones had bigger jobs to do. And we also, the older ones had to help to look after the younger ones. And in a big family like that, we more or less got into groups of two or three and went about together in groups of two or three. And we all had, somebody had to do, you know, somebody had had to do the washing up, somebody would, my older sisters would help with the cooking. On Sundays I cooked the carrots. I love to cook carrots now because it's a happy time, happy remembrance for me, seeing to that. And we all did different jobs, yes, and we all used to go shopping, have different shops that we went to, because some of them were across the main road. So they, you know, you went across those when you were, yeah, a bit older, and the younger ones went to the ones which were just round the corner.
Did your mother do a lot of cooking herself? Was,
yes,
she a good cook?
It was all cooking herself, yes. She was a very good cook. Because once she was married, she didn't work outside the home.
Yeah.
I'm not saying she didn't work. I'm saying she didn't work outside the home. She did a lot of... And she knitted and sewed. She always had something in her hand.
Yeah. Yeah.
She was always knitting or sewing. Yeah. Everything we had.
What did she cook on?
She cooked on a gas cooker. But we also had a black range, a kitchen range, and it had a big oven at one side and a fire that went underneath the oven and a boiler at the other side, and we had a big iron kettle that was always on the hob, and she used to cook rice puddings in this oven, and they were delicious, and hot pots, they were delicious.
What about your clothes? Did she make clothes? Were they bought or new or second hand?
Most of the things we wore, certainly when we were young, my mother made for us, because she was a good hand sewer. She didn't have a machine until we were older, but she was always knitting. And the dress that I'm wearing on this photograph, I remember watching her knit this. It was in pink silk and it had angora around the edges. And I thought, is it for my baby sister? But it began to get a little bit too big for her, and I prayed it would be for me. And one day we got up, and they're all talking about family photographs, and I was scrubbed, and this dress was put on me. And a clean pair of white socks, and a clean pair of shoes that my brothers used to clean our shoes with. And he'd done these. And on the way, I went with my brother Frank. We went in little batches. And on the way, we met some of his friends who were playing football. So, of course, we joined in. And when we got to the photographers, Frank was at the back. So, it didn't matter. I was at the front. And my legs and socks and shoes were filthy. So I had to have my legs scrubbed, the shoes, the socks taken off, and my shoes cleaned, but they were never as white as they had been before. And if you look at the photograph, you can see that I've got little, everybody else has lovely white socks on, I have none, and my shoes are grubby. But I didn't get into trouble, he did.
Coming back to the important thing of play. Who did you play with, and what sort of playing activities did you have?
Well, we had our sisters, of course, because there were four boys, and then there were six girls, and then one boy, and then three girls. So we were a lot of sisters at the same age. And we had the friends we went to school with. And there were always people around at our house coming to play. And we particularly, because we had this little cul-de-sac that we could play in, and we played Batten's shuttlecock, donkey, where you threw a ball of gas across the wall and jumped over it, two balls and three balls, what they now call juggling. And one of the favourites of our friends was to do them and say the family names as they were doing them, and see if they could get all the way through without dropping the ball. What else did we have? We had, when we had Batten's shuttlecock, during the war you couldn't get shuttlecocks, so we had corks, and we used to collect feathers when they fell from the birds, or when my father plucked a bird for us. We had skipping ropes, and usually, quite often, be a washing line, and you'd tie it to a lamppost, but that had to stop because one of my sisters fell and broke her leg. And then we tried to do 100 peppers. A pepper's very fast at skipping, and once you could do 100 peppers, you were it. We played French cricket with either a cricket bat or a tennis racket, where you stood still and they threw the ball and tried to hit your legs. We did handstands when nobody was looking, because we got into trouble because we showed things we shouldn't have done. My brothers played fag cards, and we were very lucky because they'd let us play with them, but the other lads wouldn't. They also played guinea pig, which is a little bit of wood shaped at either end, bang it with a stick and bang it. And years later, when I was teaching, I did games with the children in the yard, and we did guinea pig, and one boy said, "We do that in India." So it had obviously been taken over by the people who had gone over to India. Yeah. "Oh, we know that game, we do that in India." And then some people did swinging on lampposts, but we weren't allowed to do it. With a long rope, and you put a coat on it, tied it to the bar where the lamp lighter used to come, because it was gaff light when I was growing up, and swing round and round and round. I did it once, and who should come walking round the four corner but my father. So that was the one and only time I did it.
Now, you said you had a piano in the house.
Yes.
Who played it?
I did. Well, one or two of us learnt to play it, but I was the one who stayed at it the most. But my father was a singer. And the piano was bought for my mother as a wedding present. And my father was a singer, and my brother and another sister were singers in the Operatic Society, St. Augustine's, Gilbert and Sullivan Society. And so we used to get round the piano and play, and my father would sing, or my brother would sing, and we'd all join in. Because at school we had a wonderful music teacher, Miss Cassidy, and she used to teach us to sing in harmony, and we did it all the time. It was part of our life. Walking along the street, we'd sing, whatever.
Mm-hmm. What about, did you have a radio?
Oh, my father was a radio buff. He had a cat's whiskers, long before I was born, and the radio was in his room. We had to go in there to listen to it. So, of course, we had to be very quiet while we were listening to it. And we only listened to it for special occasion. I think like Children's Hour and so on.
That must have been a real treat.
It was a treat.
Mm. What about your relationships with your parents, Rosa? You know, was it a good relationship, or was it a strict relationship?
My father was very strict. And we had to toe the line. I don't think it did us any harm. It didn't hit us, but we were never allowed to fight or quarrel. We argued sometimes, but we weren't allowed to quarrel or not to speak to each other, anything that had, it was just not allowed. And the blessing of that is that now that we're all grown up, we're all the best of friends. And we keep in constant touch with each other.
What about your mother?
My mother was a very gentle lady. And I only once remember her losing her temper, really losing her temper. She bought some new bedding and she'd saved up to get that bedding because it was quite a job. And we had a bed that had those posts, those brass post things, knobs. And we had some friends playing with us because it was a rainy day and we were up in the bedroom. And we put sheets across and then we put the bedspread hanging down and we had a house that had a top and a bottom. You know, over the bed was upstairs, under the bed was downstairs, and we screwed them on with these. And when we took the balls, when we unscrewed the brass balls to take the bedding off, when my mother called for us, our friends had gone home then, there was big holes in the bedding. And we didn't go downstairs. She came up to see why we were so long, and we were hiding under the bed as far against the big double bed, as far against the wall as we could get. And she poked us out with a feather duster. I remember that. I remember poking us out with a feather duster. I guess that's the only time I really remember her really getting angry.
Did they have a you know, equal relationship? You know, did you feel that they were on an equal footing, your father and your mother?
Yes, to some extent, except that my father was out at work. And he used to come home and he would go straight into his sitting room and one of us would go and take his shoes off and put his slippers on for him. And then my mother would make him a cup of tea and we'd take that up. And she would be doing the cooking or whatever and he came out when his meal was ready. But it wasn't a question of my mother, you know, being the slave and him being... He had worked all day. And he'd worked hard. And when they took the papering boards and the ladders and the paint and everything, wherever they were working, it was on a handcart and they had to walk because people didn't have cars in those days. Everybody took them like that. So he walked miles when he was doing that.
Yeah. So did you feel that they shared sort of, you know, the decision making?
My mother did his books. Yeah. My mother always did his books for him.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay. What about celebration of events, you know, sort of special days, sort of Christmas and Easter and, you know, bonfire night? Do you have any special recollections?
Those special days were absolutely fantastic. For a particular, one thing was your birthday. Because there were so many of us, you had to share everything else. But on your birthday, you were queen for the day. And we had shop-bought cakes. And you could be the first one to choose. When it was your birthday, you got birthday cards. Christmas was magic. We used to go to bed on Christmas Eve in an ordinary house. We got up on Christmas morning and the fairies had been and the whole house was trimmed up. And there was a Christmas tree up. And on every chair, or the settee, all divided up, each one of us had a chair with our name on and all our presents. And in fact, people used to call in on the way home from church to have a look at it. And we'd get up about... And my earliest recollection is getting up about 2 or 3 in the morning. And I was too small to walk down the stairs. My brother carried me. And they lit the torch, lit the gas, the bottom of the stairs. We had a gas light there. And we all crept down. And we went in the sitting room and had a look. And it was just fantastic. And then... We all crept back up the stairs again. We couldn't touch anything because we had to go to church before we opened anything. And coming back from church, it was wonderful. And my mother cooked a marvellous meal. A turkey, which my father used to pluck and clean out the inside. And we used to watch him doing it. We thought it was fascinating watching him plucking the turkey. And then at night, neighbours used to come in. And we'd have indoor fireworks. We'd sing carols, every carol you could think of. It was just a very... And pull crackers. And it was just a very, very happy time. Easter was a big day for our church, weekend, because we had what they called quarantine, which was a 40-hour special time. And it started with a procession, and it finished with a procession. And the first procession was on the Sunday, and everybody was at it. And there were candles and flowers all the way up the back of the church, the altar. And when once you were seven, you could go and help to get that altar ready. And after the procession on the Tuesday, because the grown-ups couldn't walk on the Tuesday, the children walked on the Tuesday, as you came out, a teacher used to be standing at the top of the steps on the Confraternity Chapel, which is now part of the centre, and she would have a big, clean, new rubbish basket, wicker rubbish basket, full of big Jaffa oranges, and every child got a Jaffa orange on the way out. It was just wonderful.
What about the wits and processions? Do you have any clear memories of those?
Well, yes. They used to go and get ready for the wits and processions and come outside our house. In fact, all the houses along St Austin's Place, where everybody gathered, had pillars. And they still have those pillars, which are now painted. But they weren't painted then. And it's ready for the Whitsuntide processions. All the way along, my father and the men who worked for him used to scrub all the pillars until they were all clean and as clean and as white. And all the windowsills were scrubbed and donkey stoned, and all the front door paths were scrubbed. And across the road there was a garden where is now the car park. And it had four laburnum trees in. And those four laburnum trees were always out for the Whitsuntide procession. People used to gather outside. I never walked in a Whitsuntide procession. My older sisters did. But by the time it came down to the younger ones, it would just cost too much for all of us to be able to walk. So that was one of the things that we didn't do. One of the few things that we didn't do.
Was there a lot of pride in representing the parish in
oh,
those
yes.
sorts of...
Yes. And we used to enjoy watching our friends dressed up. I've got some beautiful photographs of it. Watching our friends dressed up, ready for these Whitsuntide processions. And then later on, when I was teaching and we had the guild processions, I used to go and help to get them ready and get the baskets with the flowers and all the rest of it ready.
Marvellous.
Another thing that we could do with the music and the church was the choir. They had a very good choir at St. Augustine's. And once you were seven and you've made your first communion, you could go and have an audition with Mr. Idden, who was the choir master and a teacher at the school. And if you passed the audition, you became one of Mr. Idden's nightingales. And you could sit with your backs to the circle that was in front of the choir and just join in when it was your turn. And we used to look through the choir because there was a long rope for the bell in a little room just off the choir. And one of the men who pulled that rope was not very tall. And we used to watch him, hoping that one day he'd go up with the rope. And it's a very happy time.
Just keeping on that theme, did you go to church as a family?
We went every morning, but some of us went to one mass and some of us went to another. Because by the time I was growing up, some of them were at work. And the ones that were at work went to the early mass and had their breakfast and went to work. And then the others of us got the little ones up and ready and went to a later mass. And then came back and had breakfast. But on Sundays, my father would go to an early mass with some of the family. Then he'd come home to be with the very little ones, and the rest of us would go across with my mother. Or we'd go across together as a group. And they had bench rents in those days. You had a bench that was yours with your name on it, and I have got a receipt for the bench rent, for the bench that we had, which is near the front of the church.
When was the daily early mass?
7 o'clock. And before it, my father used to go and ring the bell for the Angelus, which really should be at 6, but they didn't want to wake people up as early as 6. So they used to ring it before the 7 o'clock mass, and then again at lunchtime, and then again at 6 in the evening.
Okay. I'm going to come now to school. obvious question. Which school did you attend first? And
St. Augustine's.
And at
infant.
What age? What age were you?
I was 3 when I went to school. We all went to school when we were 3 in those days.
What's your earliest memory?
My earliest memory is of queuing up for the school photograph. And one of the people who was a teacher at that school lived close to me. And I had very straight hair, and I had it cut in a fringe. And my sisters had either curly hair or lovely coloured hair, except Monica. She and I both had straight hair cut in a fringe. And although I was only 3 and were in the queue, I heard one teacher say to another, "Is that the latest Harrison?" And they said, "Yes." And as she said, "You'd think they could do something about her hair, don't you?" So I went back in the classroom, got a pair of scissors and cut a chunk out of the top of my hair. And on that school photograph, my children nearly weep when they see it, because I've got my head down, chewing my collar, and this chunk of hair sticking up on top. But afterwards, the children were laughing, so the teacher, who was a lovely and loveliest teacher, she went across at dinner time to the convent and she picked daisies and she came back, made a daisy chain and put it on my head, and I wore a daisy chain for the rest of the day.
Continuing on that theme, teachers, your favourite teachers, can you remember
who
they were?
We had one or two favourite teachers because they were really very nice. Mother Martha, the headmistress of the infants, was absolutely lovely. She was a lovely, gentle person. She could be fierce, but she was lovely and we all loved her. Miss Huthersall, who was the one who taught the 3-year-olds, was lovely. Now, the next teacher, I used to be terrified of her, but I think it's because she was very tall. And she had a pair of gauntlet gloves, and in the playground, she clapped them when she wanted us to stop, and they made such a noise. And later on, I talked with her, and she was the nicest person you could ever meet. But I was scared of her when I was little. But they were all lovely. I enjoyed all of the teachers, yeah, except the headmistress in the junior school when I first went was very. She was fierce. But I blotted my copybook with her when I was little. I was playing on the front before I started school, and she came up going to church, and she must have been in a good mood because she came, I could see it now. She poked her head over the garden gate to speak to me, and I went screaming inside and shouted, a witch, because my sisters had told the stories about witches, and I wasn't very popular.
What were your favourite subjects in junior school?
Well, I loved music, we all did. Miss Cassidy, who taught us music, we called her Old Pen, and she was a lovely, lovely person, and we used to win at festivals and do marvellous concerts. I like reading, I like writing, and I like maths, yeah.
Okay. What about the classrooms? Do you remember what the school was like?
Oh, yes.
What were the classrooms like? Describe them.
Well, the classrooms were Victorian style, really. They had very high windows so that you couldn't see out of them. And when we were young, the woodwork, which was in panels, like tongue and grooves, was painted brown. And the top part was painted cream, and there were pictures on the top part always. We had dual desks, and they were heavy and iron, but every now and again you'd turn two around and you put two together so that you had a kind of table with four around, and that was when you were playing games on a Friday afternoon. The floors were wooden, and the lady who was the caretaker used to come in and spread tea leaves down before she swept the floors, and that was to catch the dust. And we thought it was wonderful if it could help to spread the tea leaves.
What did you use for writing?
To start off, we used a slate and slate pencil, and we had to take a slate rag to school, and one of the jobs that you could do if you'd been very good was have the vinegar bottle. And the vinegar bottle had water and vinegar mixed in it. And you went round and you spattered it on the slate so the children could suck it and wipe the slate clean. Mm. Then we progressed towards some chalk.
And what about the teacher? What sort of resources did the teacher have to deliver the
lesson? The teacher
had
a blackboard with chalk.
Okay. What was discipline like at school?
Very good. You just didn't make a noise. You just didn't. Because it wasn't done. But when you went out into the playground, you certainly let off steam.
Was there corporal punishment?
Yes, not much in the infant school, but in the junior school, yes, sometimes there was. I was once in a play, and I was being a star, so I was wearing a white dress, and we had to say every day, white socks, shoes, or polished shoes, or card that would go in your socks, and white knickers. And I arrived one day, we used to buy our knickers at the Janey Ball shop in Avon Lane. I arrived with Julie, with everything, got changed, got ready, and was standing ready, and this headmistress walked in. "You," she said, "stand up." And I stood up, "stand on the desk." And I thought, "what have I done?" And she said, "girls, this girl, having known what she had to do, what she had to bring, came to school in red knickers and didn't bring her white ones with her. And all the time she was saying it, she was slopping my legs. I'd have given my eye teeth for a pair of red knickers." And I didn't tell her that it wasn't me. And I was shaking like mad. And years later, when I'd grown up, I was at a party once. And somebody else who'd had a fringe like mine and who lived at the farthest end of the parish said, "you know, I was in a concert once at school," she said, "and I went to my red knickers and I forgot to take my others with me. And I thought I'd get into terrible trouble because somebody had to go home for them. But you know, they never said anything. Could have murdered him."
Keeping on that theme, what was the relationship like with the other children?
Oh, it's good. It's good. We were with a lot of friends in the school. And there was a mixture, you see. There were some very poor children in that school. And there were others who came from, you know, where they had plenty of money. But it didn't matter. We were all good friends. We were all very good friends while we were, you know, in school.
What about when you went into the senior school? Did you stay in St. Augustine's?
No, I went to Lark Hill.
Right, so you went from St. Augustine's to Lark Hill.
I got a scholarship to Lark Hill.
You got a scholarship to Lark Hill. Okay. Tell me what sort of subjects you studied at Lark Hill then.
Golly. Two lots of English. English language, English literature, French, history, general science, maths, which were divided into three. Algebra, arithmetic and geometry. Religion. Music. You know, we studied it. It was a very wide range.
Was there physical exercise?
Yes, we had a lovely gym at Lark Hill.
Right.
And we did the gym. We had to have four pairs of shoes. One pair for outdoors, one pair that we changed into as soon as we got in for indoors, one pair for outdoor PE. We had netball pitches and tennis courts, and one pair for the gym. And you had to change every time that you were changing from one thing to another. You had to change your shoes. Yeah.
So you had a good...
We had a very good gym at Lark Hill with ropes and beams and wall ladders and horse and, you know, the lot. Yeah.
So you had good facilities at Lark Hill and a good academic curriculum as well.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
What about your parents' attitude to education? Was it very positive?
When my father was 10, his father was killed in an accident and he had to go as a part-timer at the mill. In fact, they moved into a little rented house and because with an aunt and because a woman couldn't have a name on the rent book. His name was on the rent book.
How old was he?
And he was 10, 12 when his name went on the rent book. And he used to go part-time to the mill and part-time to school. But then he always went to night school. And he did he did all sorts of things when he was at night school. And one of the things that he did was art, and that's why he finished up going into decorating. And we have certificates from his night school. So his attitude to education was really very good.
Did that equally apply to his daughters as well as his sons?
It's funny you say that. In one way, yes. We all got the chance. And we all got the chance to go to, you know, to take our scholarships. But further education past that was more the boys than the girls. I went on to college, to training college, but got scholarships to do that. But it wasn't a definite, they're better than you are, and they must have it rather than you. But it was just that at 16 the girls left school and went to work.
If we look at your time in the convent, obviously it was a very formal education, so did you have a uniform to wear?
Oh, we had a uniform to wear, and it was absolutely rigid that you had to wear the uniform. It had to be the correct uniform, and the headmistress stood at the door as you walked out and made sure that you were wearing your gloves and everything else. And if you had, the older girls used to put hatpins in, and if you had a coloured hatpin, she'd pull it out as you walked up. You weren't allowed to eat anything or drink anything in the street. You weren't allowed to speak to a college boy. I got into trouble for speaking to my brother when he was in his college uniform.
So it was strictly single-sex
education? Single-sex education, yes. But it was a good education, and we were very happy then. Made a lot of friends, and we're still friends.
You graduated from Larkhill, and you got another grant to go on to further education.
I got a grant to stay on for sixth form, and then from sixth form I got another grant to go on to training college.
So did you stay at Larkhill till you were 18?
I stayed at Larkhill till I was 18. Most people left when they were 16, and when we were there, when I was in Upper Sixth, there were five of us in Upper Sixth, if you think of it now. And I've got a photograph of the five of us just before we left. There were seven of us in Lower Sixth, but two of them left, and there were five of us in Upper Sixth.
So, where did you go from there?
I went to Sedgley Park Training College in Manchester.
Okay, so describe your time there.
My time there, that was another, when I first went, I was devastated, and I didn't know what was wrong. I enjoyed the work and I enjoyed the people. And one night I was coming home, there wasn't enough room in the actual place for everyone to stay, so they bought a hotel and had it turned into a kind of a hostel, and we used to walk there at night. And as I was walking there one night with one of the girls who'd been a boarder at Larkhill, and in my year at Larkhill, she said to me, "You know what's wrong with you? You're homesick." And I'd never experienced that before because I hadn't been away from home. And once she told me that, it just made a big difference. Yeah. And because there were so many in the family, I was able to go home for weddings and christenings, which the others were quite jealous of because it was quite strict. You're getting time off.
So what sort of subjects did you study?
I studied advanced history, advanced French. Everybody did English. Hygiene, psychology. And I did art. You had to have one of those. And music.
Okay.
And I also did church music.
How long did you spend there?
2 years. It was 2 years there, but it was an intensive course in those days, because you started at 8:30 in the morning, you went on after supper till 7:30 at night.
Okay. What did you do after that?
After that, I went and taught at Ormskirk for a year, because it was the end of the war, and the people had had to be evacuated from places like Liverpool and Manchester and Birmingham. So you had to go and teach in one of those areas. You couldn't teach in Preston when you first came out of college. So I taught for a year at Ormskirk.
What sort of school?
It was in a primary school. And I came back and taught at St. Augustine's from there.
So you came full circle?
I came full circle.
And how long did you stay at St. Augustine's?
I stayed at St. Augustine's, first of all, until my daughter was born, which by then was, I stayed there for about another 10 years, and then I did part-time, and then I went back again, and then I went to teach at a school in the country, and I taught there for a few years, and then I came back to St. Augustine's, and I stayed there till I retired.
So, what year did you begin teaching?
1949.
And when did you retire?
1991.
Right, so 42 years in teaching.
Yeah.
Right, I'm going to come now to essentially social life, post-16, if you will. Tell me how you spent your spare time once you became a teenager. What sort of activities did you engage in?
Once you became a teenager, you see, it was much stricter in those days. Teenagers didn't go out as much as they do now.
Mm.
And most of the things that we went to, most of the social events we went to, were round the church. And they had dances, and we also used to go to dances at other places, like St. Ignatius had a good dance hall. And on Sunday nights, we used to go to St. Gregory's. They had a good dancing hall. And St. Walburg's. But they were all... And we met up with all the people that we knew at these various places and made new friends. Then we used to be in what was called the Children of Mary. And we did all sorts there. But also, earlier on, during the war, we used to go camping from the Young Christian Workers, which was run by the church, of course. And we used to go down to Horton Bottoms, which is behind Horton Towers. And there was a farm there, and it used to be absolutely wonderful. Mm. And we very rarely had any rain when we were down there. We were very, very lucky. And we had to make sure we didn't stand up when it was raining, because if we touched the top of the tent, it would rain in.
What about the cinema?
Oh, yes. And even that, we didn't go a lot to that. I think the first time I went was in Wales with Aunt Charlotte, and we went to Snow White. But then, when we were older, we went to see the wartime films, and we just loved those. You see, I was 10 when the war started, so by the time I was old enough to go to the cinema, it was still the wartime films or the post-war films. And then a group of us used to go on the park and play cricket and play rounders with some of the boys who live round about, and then we'd all go to the pictures together, and we'd all go to the dances together.
What were your impressions of Frenchwood during the war as an adolescent?
I loved it. It was a lovely place to grow up. It went down afterwards when they pulled a lot of the houses down and put the flats up. But it was a lovely place to grow up. Very happy, very integrated, and very safe.
Hmm. Was there a marked difference in the way that Frenchwood as a locality was during World War II? Was it, you know, could you feel that you essentially were involved in a conflict?
Oh yes, because nearly everybody. I had five of my family in the forces. I had, and most of the people that live round about had somebody, unless they were young families. They had uncles who were in the forces, and they used to come home on leave, and so you were very involved in that.
Mm.
And also, I think it was two or three people who lived close by, whose families were were all friendly together. They had people who were killed.
Mm.
And one or two of them, sometimes if somebody got a telegram they bring it round to my mother and ask her to open it for them. I remember going home from school one day and my father saying, go and make a cup of tea. And I had to go. You see, we didn't have school dinners. There were no school dinners. And I went to make a cup of tea. And it was for this lady whose son had just been killed. And she'd come round to my mother. And they'd gone into the our front sitting room. And I had to take a drink in for her. And also, if we stood out of the front door, we could see Liverpool. If you turned to look to the right, you could see the sky red, and if you looked straight ahead, you could see the sky red, and it was Manchester, even that far. And when the sirens went, if we were at school when the sirens went, we had this special thing that happened just after the war started. The school was closed for a little while, and I went back. If you could run home in 3 minutes, you could go to school. If you couldn't run home in 3 minutes, you had to stay at home until they built shelters. And so the school was different because we lived within 3 minutes. So all of us, we were all at school, but we also had a few boys in the school then, and it was very different. Ceilings soon covered in blotting paper with ink on them. Our pristine school soon changed. Yeah, yes. We were involved. I know every time the siren went, my father had made our cellar into a place where we could put planks along, and we'd put sort of bedding for the children to be on, and there was a fire in it. And we used to go down and sit on the cellar steps on cushions and sing all the time till the siren went. But first of all, we had to go up the road and get a lady who lived on her own and was terrified, and bring her and her great big ugly cat back with her and bring her down our cellar. So, yes, we were involved.
Now, did your leisure activities change as you got older? For example, when did you start courting seriously with your husband-to-be?
Not until after we came out of college. Before that, I mean, we used to be with the lads, and we used to go in the park and play all sorts of, you know, cricket or rounders or whatever, or go for long walks and all this, or rugby even. But, and you'd have one of them that would be your boyfriend. But we were very innocent. It wasn't, I don't know, it didn't get serious until we were older.
So when did you start start seriously walking out with your husband to be?
My late 20s, no, middle 20s.
And who was he, and what did he do?
He was eventually a teacher.
Right. Okay. How did your parents react, you know, when you?
Well, they just accepted him.
Yes.
Because I was a long way down. There's been a few before me.
Okay, then when did you get married?
1955.
Right. And how many children did you have?
Three.
And they?
A girl, a boy and a girl.
Okay. And are they now married or?
The oldest one is 50. Yes, she's married, she has a son. The next one is 43. He has a partner who has two children, and the youngest one's on her own.
Okay then. Your first home, was it rented or bought?
Bought.
And where was this?
Walton Le Dale.
Okay, so you moved away from Frenchwood.
Yes.
What year was that?
1956.
Right. Okay then. Did you continue to work after you had your children?
Yes.
You did? Mm-hmm. Okay. Did you ever return to live in Frenchwood?
No. From Walton Le Dale I went to Fulwood.
Right. And you've
done it. Yes. No. My husband and I split up.
Yeah, that's...
And I just don't want to talk about it.
No, don't you worry about that, Rosa.
Okay. Yeah.
No problem at all. In fact...
it's time to stop.
Yeah, it is, and you've told me some absolutely fantastic stuff. That's the first time I've ever heard about people being able to see the Blitz.
Yes.
Because obviously Frenchwood is very high and
yes,
it overlooks.
And you could see this red glow. It was like a red glow a long way off and a red glow. In fact, one day there was the fourth of the older ones was still at university when the war started. And he didn't join, the others joined up, but he was called up. And so, and he was, he used to come home and have a meal when it was the holidays, and then go for, then work until late, and then go for a walk before he went to bed,
right.
Which was often after midnight that he went for a walk.
Yeah.
And one night he was walking home, and there was, he could see this glow in the sky. And he came home, he thought, that was very near for Manchester, it was a very clear night.
Yeah.
Found out afterwards it was a house where a family, the house was set on fire and the family had burnt. And he was devastated, he said, maybe if I'd known,
yeah.
if I could have done something.
Yeah.
But the neighbours couldn't do anything, never mind him. But it really upset him.
Mm.
Because he just thought, oh, you know, I saw this fire over here, oh, it's Manchester.
Yes.
But it wasn't. It was. It had to be a clear night for us to be able to see it.
Yes. Yeah.
But we could stand at the front door and we could see it.
Yeah. Well, my mother could see the Blitz from Bromley. It was 12 miles to the east end of London, and she said you could sit in the garden at midnight and read a paper.
Yeah. Yeah. Now we weren't like that from where we were, because we're a long way from Manchester.
Yeah.
But it was just at the front.
I think it just goes to show
at the front
you.
Door.
Absolutely.
My father's
and you see that red hair. And 30 miles. Incredible.
We used to go to the cellar. One night I didn't. I was fed up of going down into the cellar, so I stayed in bed, and I heard these planes come over and go, and my heart was going with the planes all the way along. I daren't move. I daren't get out of bed.
Mm.
I daren't move. Daren't do anything until all the planes had gone. And the minute that they had gone, they were going over to Liverpool, probably.
Yeah.
I came, or perhaps up to Barrow. I don't know which.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I came running downstairs into the cellar. I never stayed. I was petrified.
Yeah.
But you know, it was a very, very happy childhood.
Mm-hmm.
Growing up time. Mm-hmm.
Everybody that I've talked to, irrespective of their circumstances, does present a picture of a very self-contained and a very generally happy community.
Yes, yeah.
You know, and St. Augustine's was a focal point.
It was, absolutely.
A major focal point, and that comes across time and time again.
Well, you know, the two, Maureen that was there the other day, and Jean, I might not see them for ages, but as soon as we meet, we're friends.
Mm.
Because we have the same roots.
Mm. Yeah, yeah.
And I got people that I meet that come to I went to school with Sunday when I was three, and she's in the same parish as I am now.
Yeah.
And we're really good friends, but that's because our roots are the same.
Yes. Yeah.
And we're all loads of us meet up together.
Yeah. Yeah.
And are friends together. People envy us. People who come in from Preston, they say you are fortunate that you've got these friends who go back
absolutely,
so far.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Lots
of interesting stuff about the fact that a woman's name couldn't go
on the rent book.
On the rent book.
Yeah.
It's really, really interesting.
Yeah.
See, things like that.
I'll tell you something else. A Catholic couldn't be the mayor.
That's right. Up until
I was a good year when I was
after World War II?
I'm not sure. I don't know the date, but I remember that Tosser Goodyear became a mayor, and we were absolutely over the moon. He was a friend of my father's.
Yeah.
But I don't know what year it was. I've no idea.
Good grief.
No idea.
And a Catholic town.
Yeah.
That's something very interesting.
Yeah.
So I think that just goes to show you.
Too long. I told you I'd talk for if you want to come.
No. Well, in fact, you know, there are lots and lots of other things that can be, you know, talked about in greater depth. Because it's really just getting a general picture, not simply of your life as an individual, but
it's all of
the community, and the community and how the community live their lives.
But I'd like one of these so I can do it for my children.
Absolutely.
Actually, I've got a lot of it written down.
Yeah, well, I think that's fantastic. Mm. Yeah,
I would use talks one of them. From time to time.
Yeah.
One talk is about what we did during the war, how our family.
Yeah.
You know, because all sorts of things happened to the family. Yeah. My brother-in-law was shot down. Yeah. Came back through the underground.
Good grief.
And another brother was missing at Dunkirk. 5 days later, he turned up in the south of England.
Good Lord.
And they said, because he was in the engineers and had been told to blow everything up. So they lost it out.
Yeah.
And they said to him, how did you get here? He said, we've come on a flat-bottom barge with a Dutchman. He brought three of them over. They said, you're very lucky. You've just come straight through a minefield.
Oh, good
grief.
And
if you hadn't been in a flat-bottom barge, you wouldn't be here. Then another brother was a prisoner of war for years.
Yes.
And even a brother who was a priest before he was ordained. He was going to be ordained in Rome. And then just before the ordination, Italy came in the war, and then they had to be evacuated back to Preston.
Yeah.
He was on holiday at the time, up in their holiday place. He couldn't get any of his stuff from the English college. Somebody had to lend him a suit to come home in.
Right.
And he got the last boat from France to England.
Right.
And then later on he became a chaplain. Yeah. And he was driving along on his motorbike when he was a chaplain, and he got this word that they had to go straight to this place that had been found and not to stop, and some shrapnel came from and went into his leg, but he carried on. When he got there, it was Belsen.
Oh, good Lord.
You know, all sorts of things happened to them.
Mm.
It was amazing. And one of my brothers was in intelligence in the Far East, and he looked up and another brother had just walked in. He said, how have you got in here? Nobody said, I have to come in here. But he got in.
Right.
Not where he was. You know, it was all sorts of things happening.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I hope they all record. They should. All of them should record their memories.
Yeah.
I think it's really important.
Well, one of my brothers, he finished up headmaster at St Mary's at Leyland, and he's written his for his family. And there's bits and pieces of mine that I've written. You know. There we are.
Oh, you must record sit down and just let you do it. Stream of consciousness.
Yeah.
Now, could I ask you, Rosa, to have a look at that and to sign it? Because what we want to do, obviously, is to use, some of the material that you've given to us today.
Yes.
Particularly with regard to Frenchwood and, what it was like.
That's
as a
why
community.
I wanted to stop. Because I didn't want to go on about things that...
No. Things that are very, very personal to you are just that, very, very personal. We're interested in the general...
That's right.
The
What you're really interested in is finding out
picture of
what it was like growing up in Frenchwood.
Picture of what life was like for you as a child and a sense of what the community was like as well.
I don't know how my mother and father managed.
Well, your mother is... And your father, for that matter. Obviously, your mother, because she had, I suppose, primary responsibility for you.
Yeah.
Seven days a week.
She was an educated lady. And
well,
she,
gosh, she's
and
like a remarkable person.
And
altogether.
Very artistic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm sure she could have been a professional photographer.
Well,
or an artist.
Well, she finished when she got married, you see.
Yeah.
But still, she had done...
Did she ever do any photography afterwards herself?
No. But you know, all the stuff that I do, all my family keep saying to me, you know where you've got it from, don't you?
Well, it is genetic, I can imagine.
What's the date? 10? No, it's not.
No, it's the 16th.
16th, is it today?
16th of July.
Right, maybe.
It's fantastic, that. That's amazing.
What's this whole idea about? And when he wanted to be done by project by. Oh, I don't know who uses it.
No.
If anybody wants to use it.
Well, yeah. I mean, whatever will be used to enhance the idea of
that's
French
right,
wood.
Yes, yes.
And what it, you know, what comes across is it's a very autonomous and very proud community.
Oh, absolutely.
You know, that's, that people really...
You know, the Frenchwood Avenue area, the people there thought they were very, very posh.
Oh, yeah. Who is it now? Sheena Nelson told me that when they came down from Scotland, she came from Govan in Glasgow, and her father was a baker, a master baker, and he got a job. It was a reserved occupation or something, so they got him this job in Preston during the war, and they came down and they went into, what the heck was it, road, what's the road? I can't think now. And she thought she'd walked into heaven.
Yeah.
You know, there was this amazing house with a bathroom inside.
Yeah.
You know, and all these facilities, and she'd come out of a tenement.
Yes, yes.
You know, in Glasgow.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
She said, a short time after they sort of opened the front door and walked through it, a lady two doors down came, knocked on the door and
cup
brought
of tea.
Brought them a meal.
Yeah, you did it.
And
was done.
You know, her mother was so sad at leaving all her friends. And that lady, her and her mother were lifelong friends.
Yes.
Just came round.
You just did it.
Brought her
a meal.
My
mother,
you know,
sending stuff to these people.
Isn't that amazing?
And then my sister did the same.
Yeah.
Some old ladies who lived in the flats, she used to make soup for them and take it to them before she had it. You just did it.
Yeah. I thought, in a sense, it's a reflection of the sort of tight-knit community that it was, and the sort of spirit that existed then, where people actually,
I'm sure it wasn't only Frenchwood, but it was.
I think both working class communities were like that.
Yes,
they were very, in a way, very quite autonomous and quite proud of, the area and in a sense, it was reflected in the way that they kept the area clean.
Yes. And you know, I've got a photograph of the houses that were where the car park is now, and it's a funeral, and it's on that thing. And if you have a look at that photograph, and you have a look at the houses, they were beautiful curtains, and beautifully clean houses, everything.
Yeah.
Not a scrap of litter anywhere.
Yeah.
No. Anyway,
and when you think they didn't have, you know, the washing machines or
no, we had a boiler.
Everything was hard. Physical.
You know, I found something out about the wartime when you said, did you know there was a war on?
Yeah.
About the refugees. We had a lot of Belgian refugees with us.
Oh, that would be interesting. That would be interesting. I'll come back to that.
Yeah.
It's something that I'll add to. That would be interesting. And did they stay in Frenchwood?
Mm. They stayed. In fact, I've got an actual picture of a house where some of them stayed. And in fact, my sister Margaret had went to a hairdresser. And the person who was doing her hair was talking about something about the war, and she said, oh yeah, my dad was an evacuee, but he stayed in England when the others went back. And Margaret said, what was his name? She couldn't believe it, because his sister had been her friend at school, Belgian girl. And we wrote to her, and I wrote to her as well, and she used to come over here and visit until she died about 4 or 5 years ago.
Great.
And when she died, all my friends signed a card and sent it to the family.
Yeah.
Because she'd been part of us.
Yes, yeah.
They came over and
that's really interesting.
Yeah.
And the other thing that comes across is that it was much more cosmopolitan than it seems to be a very, you know, you've got English people and Irish people and probably a sprinkling of Scots and maybe a few Welsh, but what comes out is that there is actually quite cosmopolitan as well. There are people from different backgrounds.
Yeah, and then you see after the war, immediately after the war, all the Poles came.
Yeah.
And we'd have lots of Poles living in.
Yeah.
In St Augustine's schoolyard, it's not new that there's all languages in that schoolyard.
No.
There were the Belgians, there were the Poles, Ukrainians, Lithuanians.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Yeah. Really interesting, that is.
Yeah.
That's something that can be pursued again.
I think it would be an idea to pursue it, because I'm sure everybody has remembrances of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
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 Well, that's fantastic. Thanks very much indeed, Ross. That's absolutely marvellous.
Do you want me to leave those with you?
Will you keep them?
Yeah.
I don't want them to be disturbing.
You don't need to worry. I've got loads of coffee.
Have you?
They're in my computer. I just
all right.
I've just printed them out.
That'd be brilliant then. That'd be fantastic. Thank you very much indeed.
Just print them. I just printed them this morning before I came.
I'm going to put them in my drawer.
In fact, she's got my name and address.
That's absolutely marvellous.
Thank you, that is brilliant, and I'll...
Jamila, it's Bernard. Sorry about the delay in replying to you. Unfortunately, I've been recording at Rosamaloy this afternoon. I'll give you a ring this evening. I'm sure that you're probably working in the library now and you won't have the mobile switched on. So I'll give you a ring probably between 6 and 7. Take care.